Hello, everybody. It is Monday, May the 2nd, 2016, and this is Setting Up Shop for the October 2015 Martha Beck Life Coach Training Cohort Section Number 1. I am Jill Farmer, and I am really looking forward to hanging out with you guys for the next 60 minutes to hopefully have a rich discussion and answer any questions or concerns or curiosities that you may have around the idea of setting up shop. Now, sometimes the inclination is for people to listen to this call. I mean, not the inclination. Sometimes what happens when people listen to this call or listen to the pre-work for this call or look through the materials for the setting up shop class, it traditionally has been a trigger for a lot of us, including me, for sure, when I went through life coach training. It's a trigger for all kinds of thoughts, for all kinds of people. For a lot of us, it was something around, I'm behind. I should know by now what I'm going to be doing with this information that I've been taking in for the last 6 months or so in life coach training. This feels like there's too much to do. I'm overwhelmed. I'm not going to get this right. So, if any of those thoughts are being triggered by you, by being triggered by the situation of being in this class, I just lovingly invite you to write down the thoughts, pull out your Judge Your Neighbor worksheets, or even better yet, partner up with a buddy or two, and don't just tell yourself, I shouldn't have those thoughts, or I can move on. Really take the time now to work those thoughts. Because if you do not take the time to work the thoughts that may be triggered by wherever you are, whether it's this class or any others, when you start deciding about taking action, you're going to be probably in some type of fear mode. And in the work that I do, I can tell you loud and clear, fear mode sets us either into fight or flight or fight, flight, or freeze mode. It shuts us down into paralysis and overwhelm, or it sets us in motion in a frenzy that doesn't have a lot of focus and intention and generally just doesn't work very well, or it certainly not, doesn't line up with our essential self very well. So I always like to say that right off the start, just in case anybody else happens to be feeling that who's in the group. The second thing I like to say is that some of you might say, well, I don't really have any desire or to do a standalone coaching practice, or I'm not sure. I don't know. I mean, I'm just still learning this stuff. I'm really working on it for myself, and I'm not sure if I want to take the show on the road, so to speak, and have an active coaching practice with other people where I'm taking money from them to do this work. And I think this information in this class is still incredibly useful if that's kind of where you are at this point. Because even if you don't have a standalone coaching practice, you may want to coach friends and family because it lights you up. It's a lifeline of soul food for you. And so having some examples of intake forms that might be useful or helpful. Or you may want to get together with some other friends and put together some meaningful retreats of some form for friends, for people at your office, for your church or synagogue or a gathering place of faith. And so it might be good to know kind of where you might want to be in terms of having some liability insurance to make sure that you can do that without any worry about any of those kind of issues that can come up sometimes around liability and hosting events. So I just want you to listen with an open mind and an open heart about the information and to trust that this class is a resource for you. The room is yours for as long as you want to keep it. So that if you get to a point in your life where it maybe doesn't feel super applicable at this moment, the information and the ideas are yours to use whenever they might be applicable to you. So give yourself permission to trust that what you need will be at your fingertips when you need it. So that's kind of where I like to start. We also like to talk about a little bit about what this class is and what it isn't. It's a place to kind of give you a little bit of structure and framework. If you think about your coaching practice kind of as a human body or a body of work, this is a little bit like the skeleton, where we're sort of giving you some basic ideas about how the bones of your practice, some things that are that seem to be somewhat universal in terms of the bones of the practice to give it a little bit of support, foundation, network, mix whatever metaphor you want to in there, as I am. But it is not supposed to be a blueprint for, you know, here's a coach in the box, everything you need, and it's exactly going to work exactly for you in your situation, in your state, province, country, you know, region of the world. There's a lot of variables. We come from all over the place. We come from with all kinds of different backgrounds and experiences and desires. So, you know, use it as a launching pad of curiosity to get a little more detailed information that fits you. Don't try to make this be your blueprint for following a step-by-step process for everything you need to know. So I think I've yammered on enough about kind of the basics here. I know there's a couple of questions, I think, on the forum that we'll get to as well. But I wanted to open it up for you guys for questions, comments, anything that sparked curiosity that you heard in any of the recordings about anything to do with setting up shop or the bones of your business. What do you got?
Hey, Jill.
Hi, who's this?
Hey, this is David. How are you?
David. Good.
Good. Liability insurance. I know you stated, like, if you're going to do workshops and events and, like, things like that, it's recommended that you have it. But is it required if you're going to be, like, sole proprietorship, do you think?
Well, you know, in at least right now in the continental United States, and, you know, things are changing all the time with this, coaching is an unregulated industry. So there's no requirement. And I can't exactly speak to what the regulations and laws are in Canada or in Great Britain or South Africa. I know where other people in these cohorts are coming from. So you got to check there. But there's no requirement. I happen to think it's a not too expensive investment that is a pretty good idea. And I carry two different kinds of insurance. I carry just kind of a general liability policy. I chose to have an attorney. It wasn't a very terribly expensive process, but to set up my coaching practice as a separate entity from me, as a LLC, so that it kind of carried its own liability and own experience. Some people, as you heard on some of the recordings, some people choose to do that. Some people do not. I just think it's a good investment in, again, kind of the foundation of your business. And then from there, I purchased two kinds of business insurance. One is a general liability policy, again, that covers me for events. And in my case, I do a couple of retreats a year. I've done workshops and things like that through the years. And the venues have required me to have that liability insurance.
Sure,
I'm not going to say that's true in every single case. And then I also carry a general policy that covers my work performance. It has different names under different carriers. It's the same kind of insurance that a lot of therapists would carry. Sometimes people who do healing modalities will carry it, and
okay.
It basically says that if somebody says, oh, you know, something not so great happened in our exchange of business here, you have some insurance protection for
mm-hmm.
those kinds of claims. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think it was more about if you're just starting out and it's more one-on-one coaching right now because you haven't evolved it into workshops and events and things like that, you still recommend having it if it's just one-on-one?
You know, I think if you're going to be, I think generally if you plan on charging people, you know, money for people for doing this work, I think that's mm-hmm. kind of one of the energy exchanges that I think is a good plan to have an investment that you make in your business is
right.
talking
okay.
to your insurance agent about what the costs are per year to do it. I know that triggers a lot of, oh, my gosh, I'm not making any money. I've got to, you know. But if you look at it as kind of the investment in the whole self, an investment in the kind of practice, it can sometimes it tends to make a little more sense. So it's right. Totally up to you. I know for some people, I've never heard of anybody having any type of, and I know lots of coaches that have been doing this for a long time, any type of liability issues. So I'm not telling you any scary stories. And so some people really find that insurance triggers something not so great in them, and that's a totally personal journey, and I invite everybody to explore that on their own. For me, it's just kind of a peace of mind issue that feels like a positive investment in my business, and that's what my body—that's where my body compass reads with it. So that's the decision that I make every year. It feels good to write the check every year in that space of energy.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks for the question. It's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Who else?
I have a question. This is Danielle.
Hey, Danielle.
Hello. I don't know if it's related to what you just posted the. But if I could just jump in with a somewhat related question to liability. It's really getting to the heart of the startup process. And you may or may not have some comments on this, but it just seems that, like, it will take time to ramp up. And I would just love to hear you comment at all on this whole concept of the ramp-up piece. And I imagine some people might get started and immediately have a full-time practice, but my impression is that there's a ramp-up. So you're going to be starting with some, and then you get more, and then you get more, but it's perhaps slow. I mean, that's where the whole insurance issue gets a little tricky, because it's like, should I, in my first year, if I maybe have – I don't know how many clients I can expect in my first year, to be perfectly honest, but it's sort of that whole, like, what do you decide to prioritize when you really have no idea once you start the process of saying, I am now coaching, I have a website, and you just sort of put yourself out there what that's going to look like. So I guess that's my biggest fear, is sort of like, I really have no idea whether my goal would be to have a full-time practice, but I have no understanding of how long it would take me to get to that point, and I'm okay to wait. Like, I have another job, and I can ramp that down as I ramp this up. But the uncertainty is a little maddening.
Yeah.
I just love to hear some thoughts around that.
Right, and apply this to the rest of your life, right? Look at this as a metaphor, right, which generally our greatest suffering comes from our desire for certainty and certitude.
Yes, exactly, yeah.
Okay, so that's why this is such a great space for us to – we feel like it's the circumstance of the decision. It's the decision of whether or not we buy insurance without knowing how many clients we're going to have. And that's really what's making this kind of crazy-making for us. And, of course, then we do the work and we sort of dig down, and we begin to realize, oh, I really want to know I'm going to be successful at this before I even give it a shot. Okay, there's where the gold is. That's where we come back into kind of integrity with ourselves. So a lot of different threads of things that I think are fun to play with in what you just said here. From just the pure practical tactical, does it take some time to ramp up? Hell yes, it does. There are instances where people leave behind an old career immediately and have a thriving, whatever is thriving to them, and I hate to throw out numbers because one person's thriving is another person's poverty. So, but whatever is a thriving business within 6 months to a year, that was not my experience. That's not been the experience of a lot of other people. Those outside examples of those experiences are somewhat irrelevant to what your experience will be. Where are you on the Colby Index in terms of cognitive style, Danielle?
I'm a very big quick start.
Okay. So, and where is FactFinder come in?
Well, actually, sorry, I didn't do this. I just know that I've been reading about Colby. I'm going to do the Colby, but I'm high. I haven't finished it, but I'm a jumper in or type person. I do a lot of research, but the implementation piece is a little exhausting to me, so I kind of anticipate that my index will be high on Quick Start, somewhat high on FactFinder, and then when it gets to implementation, I feel the heaviness, but I stick with it. I'm a very focused, like, implementer, but then lots of fear comes up.
Right. So I'm going to guess you're actually really quite high on FactFinder and Quick Start, and that's because it would be like a Quick Start to already create the facts that are probably going to be found about assessment that they haven't, by the way, actually taken yet. So, I'm fun very lovingly at you. And the people that are, if your cognitive style is Quick Start and High Fact Finder, you're going to have a lot in starting something completely new and out of your comfort zone. There's going to be a whole lot of foot on the gas, foot on the brake. And if you're not careful, your foot on the gas and foot on the brake at the same time, which burns you out.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's super important to know that, you know, to kind of come into self-awareness, not self-recrimination, not beating yourself up, coming back into integrity with yourself and saying, okay, you know, I wish I knew how much I was going to make before I, you know, bucked up and spent whatever it is, between $500 and $1,000 a year on insurance. Guessing based on what I pay. I don't know what it is for you in your world or with.
Yeah, someone said $900 in a call, so that's a figure in my head.
Yeah, and it's really all, some people have
all over the map. Yeah,
that high. It's all over the map because it depends on where you live and who your carrier is and how many other policies you have with them, blah, blah, blah. And so what needs to happen for you is to recognize, and there's a little bit of a tendency in all of us, even though we're doing this very heart-centered, connected work, we get really transactional about it. Well, damn it, if I'm going to pay this much, I better get this much back out of it, right? And that can be a place where at least I will get in my own way if I'm unaware. Whatever your style is of doing things, what your default is when you get a little bit scared is going to be your biggest opportunity for self-awareness and growth in this whole process, whether you decide you want to be a full-time coach and live in it or not. So if you're somebody who tends to be like, this idea would be great, I love dreaming about it, and I love dreaming, but God, don't make me ever get into square three. Because I just don't want it, because that makes me then throws me right back into all these square one thoughts, and I don't even want to think about the square one thoughts. I just want to sit here and dream. So this will be an opportunity, if that's your MO, to play with what happens when you actually do square three, but you do it not from a place of terror or pushing or beating yourself up, but from turtle steps. Huh, data, interesting. You heard us say on the recordings, isn't this interesting that this worked or this didn't work? Or isn't this interesting that it's working great, but I don't happen to love it? My body compass is not giving me a positive read. If you're somebody who tends to be a doer, 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 I go into action, and some of you are loving this, like, to-do list of ideas, places to get jumping, because that's where you hide out in fear, is in to jump into action and to, you know, ready, fire, aim, then challenging yourself to slow down a bit and to really listen to, what's my body compass say about insurance? Does it, when I get past the story and I kind of get into stillness and relax, does it say, oh, this feels like an anchor and a commitment toward the next phase? Or does it feel like, oh, I'm forcing something that I would really love to create my first investment and anchor by putting some money aside from my existing job so that there's an investment fund, so to speak, that I can begin to put things into my business, and that feels better for me. And I can't know that for you, Danielle, but can you begin to feel, as I'm kind of pulling at some of these threads, is any of that helping to give you a little bit of a clearer picture for yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I love that you said, like, it's really, this is the opportunity for growth. And I kind of always sense that my fear around starting the business is very much a place for me to go. So I think I just needed some reassurance on that. And the other thing I'd love for you to comment on, just because this is a FactFinder coming out in me, is that in the, I forget whether it was this week or last week, around the, you know, when you're sort of starting a business and you're like imagining the numbers, you're like, you know, what do I want to make? How many people am I client? How many clients do I have? What hourly rate? And I thought that was a really helpful exercise, except for this issue of ramp up. And so if you could just elaborate just a little bit more on what you've seen with other coaches on that, it will help. I think where I am is that I just like to hear more around this idea that it's not going to happen instantaneously, of course. But it's sort of more just hearing about that would be useful, because that sort of just brings, just helps me remind myself that I'm not looking for it to happen instantaneously. It's just that I don't know. We've heard a lot about what expectations we should have, and I realize each person is different, so you don't want to necessarily say, here is what's going to happen when you're going to ramp up. But just to know that this is a typical thing, that there is a period that can last for X amount of time or X amount of time, and that will just help me understand that this is more – yeah, I guess it's just standard. I don't know. I'd just like to hear more of that, and then I'll shut up.
Okay, and I hear two questions. I hear, I'm curious about the experience of coaches in terms of how this all happens, and I'm hearing underneath that the energy of, please tell me this is going to be okay.
Yeah, exactly.
And it tells
yeah.
you it's going to be okay. So yeah. I'm going to love the
that it will ramp up. That won't just stay at a low level. That's kind of my fear is sort of like I'll maybe find,
right.
you know, a handful of
but I can't tell you yeah. anything to change that fear.
Yeah.
It may feel good if I tell you something that you want to hear or that your ego wants to hear to make you feel better, but that is good old-fashioned work, step into your body,
right.
buddy up, play yeah. with the metaphor tool. And I'm not going to – I'm just lovingly inviting you to do that, and I'm going to give you some other thoughts on it too, because what will happen otherwise is I'll say, oh, yeah, this is how it works, and you'll be like, okay, that feels better, until something goes differently than the way that I
right.
might have given you as that example that made you feel better. And then those old, oh, no, the working, or I'm not doing this right, or whatever the core of those beliefs are or those old stories are. So I'm just – that's a great place for you to play, and – you are not alone, I guarantee you, in this group. So you're just gifting your other people in the cohort and those listening to the recording with the opportunity to do the same. And in terms of, I'll talk about how my experience worked out in terms of wrapping up clients. I really thought that I would have, and I think I mentioned this in one of the recordings, you know, a practice that I didn't know what the hell life coaching was or how somebody really was successful at it. So I took, as our brains do, the nearest thing that I could see, which was friends who had therapy or counseling practices or some other form or personal coaching businesses or, you know, all kinds of things that where there were had hourly clients and a space where people came into those hourly clients and served, you know, X number of those people on a weekly basis. And so I really thought in my mind, I'm going to have some space because I want to work with people face-to-face, and I'm going to, you know, I kind of did the same kind of numbers that I looked at how many people per week I would need to see in order to make what I thought was the living that I would want to make there, and did the math on it. And my practice now looks 0.001% like that initial practice looked like. And there's nothing wrong with that. I had to have a starting place. So for me, I had that number in my head, and then of how many people I needed to see, which I think was somewhere between like 20 people a week at, you know, X number of dollars per hour to make the money that I had. And two things happened. Number one, I didn't have anywhere near 20 people a week who were in my circle who I had begun to reach out to who would pay me for coaching at the rate that I thought that I wanted to get. And secondly, on the weeks that I did come coach even 10 people or 10 or 12 people a week, there was this weird tipping point for me once I got past a certain number of people where I was started dreading looking at who was coming up next on my calendar. Not my body compass didn't go, ooh, energy, I get to play with this person about, you know, where they are in coaching. And so that was really instructive to me that for me, a one-on-one coaching practice would look more like 5 clients a week maybe or 5 to 10 at most. Mm-hmm. And I started playing with doing other things that at the time I didn't want to do at all. I'd been, you know, my background was in TV news. I did not want to do group. I did not want to get up in front of people and speak and have to put on makeup and, you know, step into that role that I had done for many, for decades in that way. And now that's a big part of what I do. I don't. It's a blending of coaching and that past life of communicating and communicating comfortably, really, to large groups of people and putting those two things together in a way that feels really in line with who I am now. That's not what I was ready for when I launched my practice. So ramp up is a term that I guess is somebody else's term. That doesn't really work for me because it's not a ramp up for me as much as it is kind of a spiral pattern of learning, trying, doing, going through the four, you know, squares in the cycle of change, and often being in all different aspects of my life in different aspects of those squares, and even different parts of my business definitely being in different parts of those squares. Hmm. So it's, in my experience, when people just say, I hate what I'm doing, and I'm just going to stop doing, and then I'm going to go make coaching be my whole full-time job, and I'm going to make exactly the same amount of money I made, and I'll give myself 3 months in order to do that. I always say it's a little like choking your gas line in your car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're putting a heck of a lot of survival stress, which tends to trigger our fight, flight, or freeze response, on to something that, in my experience, is an art and a way of living and a career and a vocation and all those things at once. So I always advise being in this place of discomfort, of, you know, kind of recognizing that, hey, this is not like you're on that edge of, oh, this doesn't feel totally the way that I felt about all things in the past, and so that I'm totally comfortable and have a lot of certainty, and being able to combine that with a sense, come back to a sense of peace and calm. Does that make any sense to you, or is that helpful at all, Danielle?
Oh, yeah. That was great. Thank you so much. Sorry for being so dominating, but hopefully that helps some other folks, too.
Oh, I think you spoke out loud for a place that, at least in my experience, a lot of people are in this process. So thank you for, mm-hmm. and thanks for being candid and TAO, because that's always
okay. Excellent.
Who else has a live, who has a question, who's here?
Hi, this is Donna.
Hi, Donna. Yeah, I thought I was gonna call on you in a second because I think I saw your question on the.
Yeah, I have a little bit of a voice, not much, but I have my own business or have had my own business. So a lot of my lizards have been dealt with, but coaching is completely different in getting started. And I would say my fears and triggers are just that I haven't been able to keep up with the course in caring for my family. And I feel like, wow, I did take the test, and I'm a 2 fact finder. My numbers are 2, 4, 8, 6. So I'm an 8 quick start and a 6, I think it's implementer. And I forget what the other one is. That's a 4.
So
anyway.
I like to see things three-dimensionally.
Yeah, I'm having to lay everything down as far as my internal previous conceptions of time and just say, you know what? I love what I chose. My heart was completely there for my family, and I wouldn't have changed that. And the course is actually still at the perfect time of my life. It's been inspirational through a lot of stress, and I'm so grateful for that. But I feel like, wow, as far as getting even certified, I really need to soak in the class and the tools and then hopefully other people will be still willing to practice way after this is over in August, because I know I'm not going to feel up and running as far as having had the time, just pure time factor.
Okay, I'm going to stop you there because I think you did a good job of articulating it. And again, there's two things I think you're saying that are really helpful. And number one is sort of, where am I in the place of this process? Does beginning to think about setting up shop feel like it really fits in with the kind of illuminations, the learnings, the awakenings, whatever term you want to use for the process I'm experiencing here? So there's that thread that I hear, and then I also hear some energy of I'm behind, I should be somewhere different than I am, and then a lot of, which is where you start lighting up the evidence of the outside circumstances. Here's why, you know, here's the obligations, here's the things that kind of get into overwhelm, because that's what we do as human beings. And that's the work that I do for a living, is around time and overwhelm issues, because that's the place where I tend to have the greatest amount of suffering as well. And so that's the place where I've had the biggest awakenings and where I still continue to want to focus. So to kind of answer your question, just catch yourself and please work those thoughts and get together with your buddies on the whole I'm behind or I should be somewhere different than I am. That's just, it feels very true. We can line up all kinds of circumstantial evidence outside of ourselves why it's true. And once we begin to kind of work those thoughts, there's, in my experience, something very rich and fertile on the other side of those thoughts that often gives us a dose of bravery and possibility and lets us get into our body for our body compass to help us see what is possible and what we want to do next. And so if what you want to do next when you get to that space is just relish and savor the learning and continue the learning process without, you know, redirecting your focusing energy on that creation process, then honor that. There's no rule that says once you've learned all this stuff, then you have XYZ number of months. And the thing I will say, because you mentioned it briefly, the certification process, whether you think you want to practice as a coach or have a coaching practice or not, I found the experience of certification very rich, challenging at times because it brought up a lot of my stuff, right? And it helped me to deepen my roots into what I think are the meaningful parts of the coaching training. So that's my opinion. Do with it. If it feels heavy or puts you back in school or doesn't feel like it fits within your, you know, where you are financially, there's no pressure. You certainly don't have to do it. That's why it's an option, not a requirement. But it is, in my experience, it's a rich thing to do. I do want to get to your question about the intake forms. Do you still, and briefly tell me what, I'll have you say it in your own words so that I'll read it here. But what can I answer for you about the intake forms?
Well, I realize that everyone has a focus, finances, weight loss, time, overwhelm. So just within your niche, what does your free phone conversation look like? What are you looking for, I guess, in that conversation to
So, for instance, a lot of my people who come with time and overwhelm issues are really freaked out about making the time for coaching sessions. So if they can't come up with a time where we can have a session to get to know each other better, that tells me they're probably going to have a hard time making time. So they may even pay me the money for the coaching sessions, but they're going to have a hard time. They're not quite ready to really make that commitment to show up for themselves in coaching. So that's one way that I've in the past been able to kind of give information to myself, and I think in a way that supports the client, lets them know whether or not we're a good fit. I listen for people who have an open mind. I don't have to agree by any means. I want them to tell me where I'm wrong. But if in our 20-minute conversation, I've had people that all they wanted to do was tell me how they've tried everything, nothing works, and their situation is completely different than anyone else in the whole world. And they're busier, and their calendar is crazier, and their life is unfixable, and they just need me to know that. And I sense that there's really no opening, that that's how they're moving through their life, is in this kind of cocoon, and that story is what's keeping them separate from vulnerability. Of course, I believe it's probably also keeping them away from their own healing and solutions to move into the life they want to create, but that's none of my business. So I list, so if I hear that and I ask some questions, I may, you know, just say, this is how the process works. It tends to work better if you're willing to try some things, and are you willing to do that? And if I hear no, and here's why, I'm the exception, I know we're probably not going to be a good fit. I don't want anybody to waste their money. If somebody is like, in a sense where they don't, they are very, very, very entrenched in the victim stance, or if I just feel like somebody's clinically depressed, as you guys have talked about, and I've had that happen a couple times where I tell somebody, I really would love to work with you. I'd love to have you go, touch base with a therapist, and I give him some ideas of, you know, what to look for and who's helpful. And then I say, and then once the therapist thinks that coaching is potentially going to be helpful for where you are, circle back around, because therapy and coaching go really well together. But right now, I feel like therapy is a much more important first step for you. So those are some of the kind of off the top of my head examples of how that 30-minute coaching conversation has helped now. And I want to say really loudly and clearly, this has evolved over time, over the last 6 years, for sure, for Donna in my coaching practice. You know, I basically coached my face off with whoever and whatever when I started, because who I thought I wanted to coach now is totally different than who I coach in the way that I coach now. And so I needed the experience of actually coaching people and experiencing that with them before I had a clear understanding of how my own energy impacted the session, how, you know, why just sometimes it's a phase of life things and sometimes we're just not a good fit based on where they are and where I am. But those are all things that I learned by coaching and learned after I took people's money and they didn't show up again or any of those things. They weren't something that I just got right or got wrong ahead of time. I learned it was data as I tried it. Any of that helpful or useful for you?
It is. I guess as I was a realtor for a while and I walked away from several people based on the fact that I felt that they weren't going to trust me, and I was there to serve them and give them information and let them make their own choices, but I just didn't want to battle with my own clients because you're representing them and you're battling on for them. And
right.
So I guess that was just sort of intuition more than anything else, but I just thought, And you can tell me where I'm wrong. I just thought, wow, with coaching, people probably come to you and they're so already open and they're like, help me, help me, help me change because I'm stuck. And so but in listening, I'm thinking, well, I don't think maybe that's actually true.
Right.
That exactly. Everyone comes.
You answered your own inquiry already and you said, I trusted my intuition and I could just kind of sense if this is somebody I was going to work with. And I have said no to people that I looked back later and said, yeah, that was probably my own fear, my own ego. And that's okay too. I mean, that's just data and that's information. You also asked the question in terms of what's the difference is there's a difference between a coaching form and an intake form, I think. Is that how you?
Yeah.
Are different than pre-work. I'm sorry. Is intake form different than pre-work? And it depends. I mean, you can kind of do it however you want. I do them separately. So I have my intake form. I mean, I do two different forms. And one is designed to give me some insights into kind of what's making somebody else tick. So I'm just curious about what they'd like to see out of coaching, what they'd like to experience from our time together. And, I mean, that's how I do it now. And I do them on Google Forms, so it's pretty easy. I just send them a link to my Google Form. And I get – so I have one form that asks me kind of the – asks them the basic info, name, date, name, date of birth, whether they're taking any getting any therapy or taking any medications for anything related to their mental health, whether they have any children, what's their faith practice or faith of origin, if that influences the way the perspective that they have on the world. And then the other one I have, my pre-work is pretty short. Again, a lot of my people tend to be a little frenzied, overwhelmed, or kind of shut down. And so I try not to make the pre-work feel so onerous. And if somebody can't manage to answer 5 to 10 minutes worth of introspective questions, that also really tells me about whether they're going to be able to make a commitment to the coaching process as well. And so that's been a good, that's been a helpful indicator for me, that sometimes, you know, it gives us a starting point to kind of begin to do some inquiry around. So that's how I handle those too. So thank you. Thank you for that question. Both of those, I think are good thoughts. Who else has a question or a comment or something that made them curious about the recordings or something that we've said so far?
Hello, Jill. This is Maria. I wanted to say that I found the resources very, very, very helpful. They were super comprehensive, the recordings and a lot of the printouts, the PDFs. My comment is around something that was really interesting for me, and that was the whole idea of payment. One of the things that came up a lot was paying in advance and invoicing and things like that. And that I realized as I coach, I'm just coaching, you know, people, and I'm doing it for free right now. And I'm sure there's some work to be done about, you know, what I'm worth and, you know, do I think I should be paid and what I should be paid for this. And so I know that I have to do some work around that. But I was, and maybe that's why the whole concept of being paid in advance or using PayPal versus something else, I thought was really, really interesting, because what was interesting is that there were different ways to do it. And I can't say that I had even gone there. So my comment is just really around just being really thankful for the resources, and just loving that so many coaches gave their or master coaches gave their own perspectives or their own ways of doing it, and it was all very different. And like, you know, so there's just no prescription. There's a good formula, but there's no real prescription that fits everyone. It really is your journey. That's my comment. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Great stuff, and I appreciate you also reiterating that. You know, wherever in the resources you find your sticky point, like prices and all the different ways you can take money, that's again a fabulous gift of a window of a place where it's kind of fun. Doesn't always feel fun, can be quite uncomfortable, but it's probably going to be the biggest lever for you to experience some growth and insights into what's happening. So, yay, I'm glad that you have that, that you kind of had that experience, and I'm glad that the resources were helpful. We tried to be pretty intentional when we put this class together and revamped it a couple of years ago at having – a lot of resources available, and we also know that that can be kind of fire hosey for some people. So if you love it, yay, and if you find it a lot, that's okay too. So thanks, Maria, very much. Okay, who else has a question or a comment?
Jill, this is Jerry Rago.
Hi, Jerry.
Hi. I was looking at your form, your intake, your client agreement, and I was wondering – you know, maybe it's my sticking point, I don't know. What is the reason why you would ask, like, what medication they're on and what issues they sought help for therapy with? Like, I guess I'm wondering, is this information that I should have, or are you a different type of coach because of your background, maybe that would be more pertinent to your intake form?
I think a lot of coaches have at least some version of knowing where somebody is. So for instance, if somebody comes to me and has a diagnosis of bipolar disorder and or manic depression and is on, you know, currently under medical care where they have a lot of different, drugs being used to treat that, I may just say I really want to coach. I've done this before in partnership with you, and I would love it if I could have permission from you to touch base with your psychiatrist to make sure that some of the concepts that we're talking about here fits in a healthy and meaningful way into your greater mental health plan.
And then have you contacted the psychiatrist?
Sure. Yeah, many times.
Okay.
And I know stuff like that, particularly if you're in coach training, starts to feel like, oh, my gosh, I've been over my head. It happens very infrequently. But for me, it tells me, or if somebody says that they are, you know, used to be on antidepressant medication, they haven't been for a while, and I'm hearing signs in our conversations that we've been trained, as you guys have too, to recognize that there may be some depression coming back. I may be a little more direct about asking them to touch base with their healthcare provider and make sure that some more intervention for depression isn't helpful. So it's not an attempt to pry in anybody's history or to try to interpret anybody's mental health history. I have a deep belief that when we can kind of be open with people who deserve it, and I would hope that a coach would be deserving of somebody's trust and confidentiality, that we can kind of be honest about our whole self. It takes some of the shame stories that sometimes we have about things like where we've sought counseling or help in the past, and it just kind of opens the door on it so that somebody isn't coming in trying to pretend they're all together and perfect all the time, because none of us are, and we all are. I mean, we're both of those things at once. We're perfectly who we are supposed to be and perfect in exactly whatever our journey has been, you know, whether it involves or involves mental health support or not. Did that answer your question, or is there some
maybe it's my sticking point of just feeling uncomfortable, like even knowing how to interpret, like, what type of medicine someone's on, you know, and
that's not your job, and so that's a great clarifying question. Your job is not to interpret whether somebody should or shouldn't be on the medicine or not. It's just to use it as information that informs if there's something that, in the examples that I gave you, that informs you for coaching support to make sure that you're working with people who are getting the mental health support they need and are mentally healthy while they're working with you.
I might have phrased that wrong. I meant to interpret, like, if they say they're on such and such medicine, I don't even know, like, what that means, you know? I don't know the different types of medicine, because that's what you said. If so, what type, you know? So that's it's probably just my nervousness with the topic of, you know, how I'm going to handle it, because it does seem sticky, you know, saying what you have to
say,
you know?
And that's where you just realize, you just ask, okay, I'm not familiar with that medication. What is that for?
Okay, yeah. Okay.
You can Google it, but I just would ask, what do you think?
Yeah, you're right.
How do you find that it benefits and supports you?
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
Hey, Jill, it's Robin.
Yeah, Robin, what you got?
I was also looking at your intake form, specifically wondering if you could speak a little bit about why you have the client call you for the appointment.
Great point. And I no longer do.
Oh, okay.
I used to. What goes into that? And so that's a great question. And I think I originally had it because the coach who kind of mentored me when I was starting and who had taught this class had a strong feeling and belief that clients, that that's part of the engagement process and that's part of kind of anchoring into the relationship and partnership is that the client, you know, says, I'm taking responsibility for calling you. And I did it that way for a long time, and then things would happen like I live in a place that doesn't have a great cell phone signal at my house, and so I have a landline, but then I have a landline that tends to go out when it rains, like ants get in the box. And so I'm sitting here thinking all kinds of thoughts about clients who are not calling me at the appropriate time, and it turns out they're trying, and my landline is dead, and I had no way of knowing that because I hadn't been on the line. And when I was traveling, and which I do a fair amount with my corporate and organizational clients, and I might have an individual client session scheduled, and so it took a lot of communication back and forth to say, you know, call me on my cell phone number, not my landline, or if I'm traveling internationally, you know. And so I just found it's a lot easier for me now if I have when the client, I use Acuity scheduling, and when they set up their appointment, it asks them to put in the telephone number they want to be reached at during the call, and about 99% of the time it works just fine. I call them at our appointed time, and it works well. So thank you for asking the question and allowing me to clarify that that part of the form is, has evolved and changed, and that's why. Does that answer your question?
Thanks. Yeah, and thanks for the background.
I also just have a little comment on that. It's Heather. I worked with a coach for years, and it was the same thing. I called her, and then so recently I was really super stressed about telephone packages and long distance, and, you know, I'm in Canada, and what if I'm working with people overseas and stuff like that? And so I also just decided that I would have clients call me, and it took all of that stress away. And my landline has not failed me yet, and so it just made my life easier. It was like one less thing I had to figure out, and it did put, you know, more responsibility on the client. But so far, nobody has even questioned it. No, like, nobody's complained about it, or they just work out, make sure their long distance is working, and it's been awesome for me.
Yeah, that's – I completely get that. So thank you for that. That's a great insight. And part of it is just going to be you got to try it and sort of see. So a lot of clients who are coaching who are coaching in the U.S. and have clients in Canada or coaching in Canada and have clients in the U.S. will do that. We'll have a number that, you know, sometimes they get a 1-800 number. Heather, do you have a number so that it's not long distance for anybody who's calling you either way, or is it just up to them to pay whatever charges?
No, I just leave it up to them because, like I said, it was stressing me out, and then I just decided to let it go. And so far it hasn't been an issue, and I may have to look at it again in the future, but so far it's working.
Yeah, I think you just need to explore it however that is. Because I know when I had the number and had people calling me, I had a couple Canadian clients, and they felt it was a bit onerous to have to pay the fees to call, and so we kind of figured out that it worked better for us to use Skype or a Google line in those situations. So you will be informed of that once you get
Yeah, most right. of my clients, true, have been Canadian so far as well. So, you know, and usually there's pretty good long-distance plans within the country, so it hasn't been a big deal, but, yeah.
Yeah, and that's the case most of the time. Almost always it's like, especially in – long distance isn't really a thing unless you're calling internationally, and that's where some people will find the investment in the toll-free number or in that's where maybe a Google line or using a Skype audio line with the clients that are international just feels good to them.
Yeah.
And if somebody's got an international calling plan where they have X number of minutes overseas, they're not going to care.
Mm-hmm.
So great. Thank you for that. Well, in our last 5 minutes or so here has a question or comment.
This is Melissa.
Hi, Melissa.
Hi. I was wondering if you offer online support between calls, which I saw a lot of coaches do. Is there any limit that you put on that in terms of how much support you'll give?
Great question. And for me, that has been a, you know, experience that it's a that I've created a little more of a boundary around. It's still a very fluid, viscous boundary. It's not hard and fast. But I, when I first started coaching, I would do a follow-up email with a ton of details about kind of my notes and resources, and it was, you know, a couple pages long, and that felt good to me. The clients really liked that resource and would go back to it and talk about it later, and it was just kind of part of what happened. In the last couple of years, I started to recognize that something kind of tipped for me, and it started feeling like a, I had this very not great energy around doing more comprehensive follow-up notes after a coaching session, and so I stopped doing them, offering them in my packages, working with individuals, unless it's something that's like, you know, now, or I might do it just kind of out of habit, but it's more of an outline. Here's a few takeaways of what I experienced, and here's some things that I'd love to see you play with, some inspired action. I don't love the word homework, so I try not to use it, but some inspired action I'd love to see you put into play between now and our next session, and let me know how it goes. And I noticed that when I either didn't do follow-up notes in some of my coaching packages and group programs, I didn't do any at all, that I did get more inquiries, just from people saying, what about this? And so we would have email dialogues. And that kind of felt good to me. I sort of like that back-and-forth coaching. And I had just one or two clients where it became almost like an every other day. Okay, but what about this situation and this circumstance and this? And so I just had to kind of gently and lovingly say, let's take that up during our next one-on-one session because we can spend, you know, a lot of time going back and forth. I want you to try this, and I want you to take note for yourself what's happening, mm-hmm. and then let's talk about it during our next session together. So that's what has worked well for me. You know, email coaching used to be kind of a thing of, you know, back and forth. I have coaches that don't do any email, but they'll text clients back and forth with, you know, kind of ask them to check in when they've done something that they were stretching themselves on just to kind of have a witness, a compassionate witness to whatever it is they're doing. But for me, I build into my pricing and into kind of my expectation and energy structure that there will be some correspondence and dialogue sometimes between sessions, and then I just feel into when it starts to feel like it's crossing over. And in both cases, when I got really clean with it and just communicated that to the client, there was no pushback or you're not giving me what I thought I was going to get. It was just a kind of midstream reevaluation of what worked.
Thank you.
Does that answer your question?
It certainly does. Thanks.
Good. We have time for one more question before I let you guys go. Anybody got one? Well, thank you. Great. Great job stepping up and asking questions and being willing to be vulnerable and candid. And I hope you will continue this discussion over on the forum as some of you are letting this stuff soak in, or you have a, but why did you do that? Or why would someone do this? Or I'm really thinking that this feels better to me. Can you, do you have any experience or feedback about whether you've seen that work in your own practice or in other colleagues' practice? Always happy to answer any questions like that and to reach out with anything that is that might be helpful for you guys to support you in wherever you are in the process of beginning to put your art out into the world. And we'll be talking in a couple weeks, getting your practice into the world about the ways to begin to kind of tell your story and stretch your limits. I hope you're coaching your faces off with each other, using your buddies, learning both while you are coaching and being coached, because they're equally instructive and enlightening in my experience. It's been really fun to be with you guys. And if you have any other follow-up questions, don't hesitate to just to reach out to me directly, email me directly from my website or, you know, friend me on Facebook and reach me. I'm happy to answer questions that way, too. I really love it if you do it on the forum just because 99% of the time somebody else can learn from whatever it is that you have a question about as well. But I'm happy to do it either way. So goodbye, everybody, and thank you. Thank you for a great great 60 minutes together.
Thanks, Jill.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.